The time is 2 minutes in the of 6 o'clock. This is Early Morning Scoop. A very, very good morning to you, to the Early Morning Scoop, and welcome. This is a show where we speak about the economic entrepreneurship policy update. We give you all that until the hour of 7:30, and I'm your host, Lois Ashimi. And of course, before I get into the segment of the international news, we normally start with the international news, but before I give you that, please do not forget to rather connect with us on our social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village News web page on Facebook and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, just for the daily news update. And of course, the newspaper, like today, the newspaper is out. Please do not forget to rather ask for it, to subscribe. You can simply just, what you have to do is just to rather subscribe. And by doing that, you can able to get the newspaper daily. And with our channel, the handle is Eagle FM Media House. So long you click there, you can able to be getting the newspaper every time it's released. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Or rather, you can send through your details that include your name, your email, your number to 081-241-44, 081-241-44. That's a number that you need to save, because if you don't save it, then of course you might not receive anything. But if you save it and then you ask for the newspaper, you can able to be getting the newspaper every time it's released. And do not also forget to download the Eagle FM app. It's available on Google Play Store and App Store, just to stay informed wherever you go, wherever you are, you can able to tune in. I mean, that's the app where you can find all the podcast, even any program of yesterday that you missed out, you can able to listen just through the podcast by just downloading the app, Eagle FM app. It's just an interesting app, actually, because, I mean, if you would ask me that, how do you get to listen to a past show? Then, of course, you need to download that Eagle FM app. Then you can able to listen to all the past shows, that you have missed out. And please do not forget to download as well as the Imba app. You'll find that on your Google Play Store and, of course, the App Store. Now, to start off internationally, is that the scientists in Ghana are testing a new farming method to grow yams without a need for traditional stakes, now which contribute to deforestation. Now, by using live stakes, live pigeon piers, and beta dam cells, now the new method improves soil fertility while increasing yams yield.
Yams, one of the most widely consumed tubers in Ghana, are in short supply. Prices for what is available have rocketed. This is due to factors including declining soil fertility and shortage of plant support stakes. Traditionally, farmers cut down trees to use as support for the yam vines. Over time, clearing new fields and making more stakes results in deforestation and increased production costs. Prices of yam is expensive, and consumers can't withstand the price. Buying 100 pieces of yam is not easy to reckon with. Where the yams are grown in Ghana is very far from the capital, Accra. The fuel alone used for transporting yam is also not a joke. Scientists are now introducing a new yam growing method that boosts yields and eliminates the need for stakes. They're using plants such as pigeon pea and beta damsel as live stakes. This method can also improve the soil and bring other benefits to farmers.
You grow yam from the edible tuber. That has been the norm, growing yam from the edible tuber. So it also puts a lot of demand on the yam. And yam prices go high during the planting season, because the tuber that you eat is the same tuber that we are going to use as seed. So from our technology, we were looking at high ratio multiplication techniques to ensure increased numbers of the seed yam for the farmer to use in the seed and the yam production.
Additionally, the scientists also look to improve the quality of yam seeds.
As part of our research, we work extensively to ensure that we have full sustainability when it comes to yam. With yam production, seed is a critical factor. And the seed, having access to quality seed, can take up to between 60 and 70% of the production cost. In line with our research, we focused on ensuring quality seeds.
And many are happy to embrace these improved methods. The innovation has come. It's a laudable move that more than 10 tubers of yam can be uprooted from a single hole. And this is quite amazing for us, who are used to buying and selling it here.
All right, there you have it. Now moving on to the energy sector that's in South Africa, is that Electricity and Energy Minister Ramakgopa has announced further regulatory reform to address concerns over Eskom's grid monopoly and enable more private sector participation in the electricity distribution. Now, this relates to the rules created to govern the relationship between the independent energy producers and independent consumers of that energy around the country. The minister says the country will no longer rely on Eskoms as the sole generator of electricity. Now there will be multiple generators, and with competition comes innovation, efficiency, research, investment, and of course, ultimately, more affordable electricity.
Transfer of clean energy or electricity from an independent generator or producer in one part of the country to a consumer of that electricity in another part of the country. Electricity and Energy Minister Dr. Josienzo Ramakgopa says this is going to help to positively transform the energy landscape.
So it's going to make it possible for a mine, for a retail complex, for a business that is wants to transition to green, cleaner forms of electricity, for an entity that does not necessarily want to rely only on Eskom, to get into an agreement with anyone or any part of the country to provide for that electricity. And then we're defining what those rules are.
Ramakgopa explained how the rules formalized by the energy regulator NERSA should enable the free flow of electrons from energy producer to energy consumer.
The rules aim to clarify system access for generators. So those who are going to say, I have an ambition of being an electricity generator. So if you like an Eskom on a small scale, at the localized scale, but they still need to get an off-taker, someone who's going to buy this electricity that they are generating. So what NERSA will do will determine the rules as to generate this electricity. How do we give you access on our freeways and byways, the transmission lines that I referred to, and also the distribution and reticulation network. And then for someone who wants to do an off-take, but says, I need cleaner forms of energy, I really can't rely on Eskom, I want to see who can offer me better pricing in the country. I really don't care where that person is. As long as you are able to give me this quality of electricity, the consistency, and this is the sources of energy that they must give me that electricity. Once they do that private arrangement with whoever the generator is, what NERSA will do will determine the rules on how that electricity, the electrons, get to that person who wants to consume. So really that is what is before us. I want to simplify a very complex engineering question. It's really about that. Just think of the freeway. You want to get to Moria. How do I pay the toll gate when I move from Pretoria to using the N1? That's all that we are doing today.
The minister says the opening up of the energy landscape will result in competition among energy suppliers, adding that this should place Eskom on its toes as it looks to remain sustainable, while also suggesting that energy prices could be more competitive down the line.
If there are multiple generators of electricity, it's going to ensure that competition is intense. So Eskom is our dominant player. It has to be efficient, because if you are not efficient and someone is efficient, is able to produce the electricity cheaper, you are major users of electricity. will abandon Eskom, will go to someone who provides cheaper, because it makes sense to do that. And in that way, Eskom is going to lose business. So what Eskom will be forced to do is to ensure that they compete with those new players. As they compete with those new players, they'll invest in research and development, they'll bring down the cost of electricity, then everyone gets to benefit.
Ramaphosa says the introduction of the wheeling framework should serve as a catalyst for further investments in renewable energy projects, as investors will...
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to Morocco, is that the Rabat's richly tourism is booming with new hotels and more under construction, catering to growing Asian and European demand. Now the tourism account for 7% of Morocco's GDP.
That is one of a host of new grand properties in the capital. It was a former palace in the 18th century and then a military hospital in the early 1900s. The hotel boasts an architectural design that reflects Moroccan heritage, such as carefully carved wooden ceilings.
Because we are very proud of the history of the place, from the Sultan to the military hospital, the team is all aware of what it used to be and share the history of the place with all the guests checking in. And especially with the clientele coming at leisure, we'll be very interested to know what happened in the place. One of our rooms, you can actually sleep where the Sultan used to sleep.
About 23 kilometers from Rabat, the Conrad Rabat Azana Hotel overlooks the Atlantic Ocean. Some of its rooms are fitted with private pools on the balconies. The hotel's restaurant serves a selection of dishes, including Asian cuisine, to cater to their many guests from Asia.
What we saw recently really increasing is, for example, the Chinese market or the Asian market. In particular, Taiwan, for example, there's the tour operators, and they show a great interest to Morocco, looking for new destinations, something new that a lot of people are actually looking at now.
With the luxury hotels reaping the benefits from foreign travelers, they are increasingly focusing on personalized experiences. They combine local and international dishes, provide spa and wellness services, and host boutique shops that sell a selection of traditional fashion and accessories.
We have approximately 10 luxury hotels, all of them international brands. The goal is to attract the largest number of international tourists. There are also approximately 5 luxury hotel projects currently under construction.
According to tourism officials, visitors to the luxury hotels also want to discover Rabat through its history, explore the country's beaches and culture. Morocco relies on tourism.
Right, and there you have it. The time is 15 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now to move on to Zambia, is that the International Monetary Fund says Zambia's economic recovery program has responded to the needs of citizens in a way that many thought were impossible. Now the Deputy Management Director says the reform has provided more human capital in the health and education sectors. Now he says reform has also enabled more spending in the social sectors, especially during the drought last year. Now he says that the reform have further strengthened Zambia's microeconomic fundamentals.
The fund IMF has praised Zambia's economic recovery program as a model centered on uplifting citizens' lives. Speaking when he interacted with journalists at State House, IMF Deputy Managing Director Nigel Clark said the ongoing reforms have paved way for the recruitment of thousands of civil servants, particularly in the health and education sectors. In just 4 years, government has brought over 70,000 new professionals into the public service.
Social support spending has more than doubled from 0.7% of GDP to 1.7% of GDP, which means that the vulnerable population has been able to receive more support from the government, more than twice as much as prior to this reform effort. In addition to that, the government has been able to reprioritize and implement free education to the benefit of millions of Zambian children.
And during a meeting with President Hakainde Hichilema at State House, Dr. Clark said the remarkable progress is rooted in the Zambian government's clear and consistent commitment which has driven coordination and implementation of the reforms.
The most important factor in all of this has been the demonstrable commitment of the Zambian authorities and the ownership of these reforms by your government, which is always crucial in success of reform efforts of this kind.
Meanwhile, President Ejidema says the economic transformation has helped restore the strength of the treasury, which had been strained by years of unsustainable debt.
And now with the global geopolitics that definitely changed, we can pretend they haven't changed, they've changed. We would like to work with you on the Zambia reform program anchored on driving economic growth, sustainable growth. The 3 years we'll be working together into October. We do not want to negate the gains we've made. As Zambia, as IMF.
President Ejidema says the program has strategically shifted government's focus from consumption to investment-driven spending.
We have, by and large, worked very hard to get the key mining assets back, including new investments. We have mines that were shut for 46 years. They're now will be back in production. We are in the space that we weren't 4 years ago as a country. Then the drought came, worst drought in living memory, wiped out our energy, electricity from a surplus, from an exporter to a deficit, because we were largely hydro.
He adds that the impact is evident, with more than 2 million children now back in school, something he says is a direct result of renewed policy priorities.
We can actually send 2 million children to school who were out of school. 2 million. As a Jamaican kid, as a Zambian kid, think of it. If you were taken out of school when you needed school, you would have never been, you never had the opportunity to get to Oxford. Never had the opportunity to sit where you sit today. Just education. So Zambians now have accepted that this new government is here to ensure that the best investment, inheritance, equalized according to education is here to stay.
And speaking at the same meeting, Finance Minister Stumbeko Mosokotwane said Zambia's investment landscape has significantly improved over the last 3 years due to the momentum generated by the economic recovery program.
The economic growth of the country has consistently been up, or rather positive, even in a drought year like last year. And the investment interest in our country has improved a lot since then. But also, I think we did a lot of reforms. Reforms of cutting out wastage from our budget and the money being diverted to areas which benefit the common person more.
All right. Now, to move on to the next item is that the 325 basis point interest rate cuts implemented by the South African Reserve Bank have been a modest improvement in the financial position of South African households. Now, according to the fourth quarter household resilience index, the ratio of household debt cost to disposable incomes has also declined to 8.9%. Now, the index also reflects that year-end bonuses, temporary jobs over the festive season, and withdrawals from the pension funds were contributing factors. Let's take a listen to this.
Temporary jobs over the festive season and withdrawals from pension, modest improvement.
Yes, fortunately, there was an increase in private sector employment, which is always good news. And households had a little bit of more money to spend. The ratio of household income to debt costs improved marginally, although it's still lower than before COVID. And I think we all know why. It's because of the record high interest rates. But the standout performance, unfortunately, were withdrawals from long-term savings via the two-pot system, which was introduced in the third quarter of last year. Now, although this provides households obviously with more financial resilience, it's short-term, and it does have a detrimental impact on their long-term savings. So it's not actually recommended. But when you have no choice, because your debt cost burden has risen from 6.8% before the Monetary Policy Committee started raising interest rates, it was 6.8% of disposable income. So if you earned 100 rand, you were spending 6 and 80 on servicing your debt. Now that's close to 10 rand.
Yeah.
Actually close to 9 rand. So there's been a significant increase to the highest level also in almost 2 decades in the amount of money the share of the incomes that households have to spend on interest on debt. But what it's mean is that there has not been the slightest indication of demand inflation in our economy since before COVID. So higher interest rates cannot fix a 700% increase in global freight shipping charges. It cannot fix a 400% increase in the oil price, which were the two reasons why our inflation rate went up in 2021. And what frightens me is that we have a Monetary Policy Committee at the Reserve Bank that believes that you can combat these cost-pushed price increases by taking it out on households and taking your interest rate sky high and raising the cost of capital and the cost of credit. It makes absolutely no sense.
I'd like to interject there, Dr. Botha, and maybe ask about then what a near-term outlook would be, especially as we warn that households are not out of the woods yet. We do know that the Reserve Bank was still as cautious at its last meeting when it decided to hold on rates.
Yes, that's even scarier, the fact that they did not use the opportunity at their March meeting, the ABC meeting, to lower rates further. Myself and several other economists and analysts were hoping that they would use the opportunity in the absence of demand inflation and in the absence of meaningful growth to keep on lowering the interest rate by 25 basis points at every second month at their meetings, but it didn't happen, which is a huge problem. The withdrawals from lump sum payments from official pension funds year on year, according to the Outland FinTech Index, were 36% increase year on year. This is scary stuff. At the Optimum Investment Group, where I'm the economic advisor, we've also picked this up, and we advise people, think twice, think three times before you dip into your savings. Quite frankly, the monetary policy of this country is not doing us any favors right now.
Lastly, Dr. Botha, what does this mean for sentiment, especially as Budget 2025 is still in those realms of uncertainty until we get to the 21st of May?
Yes, as you pointed out, there's so much uncertainty right now. If you look at the S&P Global Purchasing Managers Index, the Stellenbosch Bureau for Economic Research, their PMI for manufacturing, it's been below the 50 neutral mark for quite a while. The good news is that we created 400,000 jobs, more than that even last year. The good news is that the Government of National Unity has shown us, especially at Home Affairs and at the Public Works and Infrastructure, that we can make a huge difference if they can get beyond this VAT fiasco and start spending money as quickly as possible on improving South Africa's roads, railways and harbours. Then we can go places in 2025. We need to create jobs quickly, and there are plans on the table. And one of them is the World Bank roadmap, which we requested, how to get South Africa to higher growth. That report was provided to government. They requested it 2 years ago. It's on their table. They just need to implement this, and that means radical reforms in the public sector.
Right, there you have it. Now, lastly, on the international segment is that the South African Petroleum Retailers Association has welcomed the third consecutive petrol price drop in 2025, now saying it provides immediate relief to South African motorists and businesses. Now, the Mineral Resources and Energy Department announced this week that a liter of petrol will cost 22 cents less. We might take a listen to this.
Diesel will also drop by 42 cents a litre when the May fuel price adjustment comes into effect at midnight. The price reduction is due to lower international oil prices and a stronger rand. SAPRA National Vice Chairperson Lebo Ramulashwani speaks to us about this. Thank you so much for your time, Lebo. Let's start with SAPRA now having welcomed yet another fuel price drop. Do tell us then about the impact of it being tangible.
Yes, thank you very much for having me, and good evening to your viewers. Yes, this is a very welcomed relief for motorists, retailers as well, you know, everybody in general. The most important aspect of the tangibility behind this decrease is the fact that when you get to the pump, you're going to immediately feel the relief where 50 liters of fuel is going to actually give you more liters because it's going to cost you way less.
Having said that, there is an expectation of further petrol price cuts into the rest of 2025. Is that maybe a little too optimistic?
Well, considering what's currently happening on the geopolitical space, you know, as we can see what's happening between China and the U.S., anything, we can really expect anything. But part of the result and why we are feeling the relief is due to what's currently happening globally.
And that uncertainty with the geopolitics, how much risk has been factored into the gauging of petrol prices?
Well, on a geopolitical level, you know, when the price of Brent crude is continuously dropping due to a trade war happening between China and the U.S., you know, we just ultimately reap the rewards because, you know, China is no longer importing as much as it was, and the supply on the market is still quite high. Hence, you know, the demand has dropped, but the supply is higher, and therefore the dropping prices, and we feel it at the pumps.
As a parting shot, I must also ask you about expectations around the fuel levy come budget 3.0 that will be tabled later this month.
Yeah, you know, the previous budget did, it left the fuel levy unchanged. So,
all right, there you have it. Now we can go into a very short commercial break, and once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Do not go away.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, Rio Sherero o Maimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM to...
Right, welcome back. The time is 31 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Mornings Cube. And thank you so much. And if you just joined us right now, thank you so much, and a very, very good morning to you. So welcome to a show which is like dedicated to you, just to give you the economic update, the trade, the entrepreneurship, that's what we give you into the of 7:30. Now, to start off, is that the The government plans to borrow 29.8 billion Namibian dollars during the 2025 to 26 financial year to meet its budgetary requirements and other financial obligations. Now, of this amount, 21.2 billion Namibian dollars will be raised from the domestic market, according to the finalized borrowing plan released by the Bank of Namibia on behalf of the government. Now, with the central government facing a deep fiscal deficit, the issuance of government securities presents an opportunity for investors seeking growth. Now, according to the borrowing plan, the national budget tabled at the end of March has a funding shortfall of 12.8 billion Namibian dollars, representing a fiscal deficit equivalent to 4.6% of the country's gross domestic product. Now, this means the government must borrow to fund planned expenditure, either because spending has exceeded expected revenues or because economic performance and the task correction has fallen short of projections. Now, the plan does not explain the underlying reasons for the persistent budget deficit in recent years. However, this year's borrowings need are driven not only by the current budget deficit, but also by maturing debt obligations. Now, in 2025 to 2026, the government must repay several domestic and foreign loans. Now, those include 3.8 billion Namibian dollars in foreign loan principal repayments and 3.9 billion Namibian dollars in local bond redemptions, unless it opts for bond switches again. Now, additionally, the government must settle the outstanding 2.3 billion Namibian dollars euro bond this year. So now, according to the finance minister, Elika Shafuta, the total net financing requirement for the year stands at 29.8 billion Namibian dollars. Now, of this, 21.2 billion Namibian dollars will be sourced domestically and 8.6 billion Namibian dollars from external sources. Now, one of the identified external lenders is the African Development Bank, from which the government plans to borrow 2 billion Namibian dollars. Furthermore, the government plans to raise an additional 2.3 billion Namibian dollars in external project financing through specific sources when not disclosed. Another 4.3 billion Namibian dollars in external borrowing is planned, but the borrowing plan does not specify its intended use or funding sources. Now, compared to the previous fiscal years, domestic borrowing requires of 15 billion Namibian dollars. The 2025-2026 target presents an increase of more than 6 billion Namibian dollars, largely due to the higher volume of debt maturing this year. Now, the Treasury and the Central Bank indicated that a key strategy this year is to front-load borrowing in the first half of the fiscal year. Now, this approach is aimed at taking advantage of current higher liquidity levels and preparing for significant repayment due to early in this year. Now, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is that my colleague Zafia Basun interviewed Twamango Luka Ngidimwa, a business leader at Sikonda Green Schemes, now who spoke about the labor issues facing Namibia. We might take a listen.
Good morning, Mr. Ngidimwa. How are you doing?
Doing great, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So last week was Workers' Day in Namibia, and this day was commemorated at Oshakati Stadium in the north, with President Nandi Ndaitwa delivering a message to the workers. And as an entrepreneur in various sectors and an employer, given the various labor issues and the broken relationship between employees and employers that exist in many sectors, we want to hear your perspective on this. Namibia is battling a number of labor-related disputes. As a business leader, how do we solve such issues?
Well, I believe labor-related disputes are in every country. It is quite a natural phenomena that happens between the interest of employers to maximally get the best out of their workers, and then employees also trying to get the best benefits out of their employees. employers. And I believe these disputes can be addressed, I think, through open communication, transparency, and early conflict resolution mechanisms and policies that are in place, if they are in place. For example, I'm the farm manager at Secondo Green Scheme Irrigation Project. Mm-hmm. And here we emphasize proactive engagement with employees, where we listen to their concern, but we also make sure to clarify expectations, which is, I think, very, very important. And then we also, we involve them also in some decisions making, which can also improve, the work relations between employers, and employees. The other aspect is also investing in training, especially in our managers and employers around the country to really, understand, how to manage labor conflicts or labor relations and conflict resolutions much better. Above all, it's about building trust, I believe, and creating a very conducive workplace and workplace cultures that value fairness, respect, and accountability. So when workers feel that they are heard and they are valued and that there's fairness and that they are respected, you actually can have a very productive labor force that contributes tremendously to the nation's economy. So that's what I would say.
Okay. Solving labor issues requires tripartite negotiations. What is your message to employees, employers, labor unions, and the labor ministry?
To employees, I would say continue to voice your concerns constructively, but professionally. Your contribution is the backbone of our country's economy. To employers, I would say, let's lead with empathy and uphold fair labor practices, because any business or organization's long-term success depends on workforce stability. So the workforce have to be stable and our workers have to be happy. There has to be job satisfaction for them to continue contributing to the productivity of our organizations. To labor unions, I would say remain a bridge, not a barrier, between workers and management, and engage in constructive dialogues that promote fairness, respect, and accountability, but not chaos or confusion, because that often also happens, which also can sometimes create a lot of unnecessary strikes that can also hinder and affect our economy. So I think that, and then you said to the Labor Ministry, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and the Labor Ministry, I think we have to appreciate that we do have a Labor Ministry that provides oversight to our labor issues. And I'll even go as far to say, I think, although there are a lot of labor issues, I think our ministry should be applauded for really providing support. If you go to the Labor Ministry offices, especially inspectors, they are really very supportive. So we appreciate that. But we urge continued efforts to maybe modernize dispute resolution systems and strengthen workplace education. That is, I think, the most important aspect that where we need improvement. Just workplace education about different labor laws so that both managers and employees are on the same page. I think when all parties commit to mutual respect again and shared responsibility, then labor harmony becomes achievable.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ndingwa, thank you very much and please have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. Have a good day also.
Goodbye.
All right, bye.
All right, there you have it. And now the Mr. Ngindima just pointed out that the conflict between the employers and employees are a normal occurrence that can also be effectively managed through transparency, proactive conflict resolution, and also open line communication. Now, Ngindima also stressed the significance of including workers in the decision-making process and, of course, the necessity of investing in training for both employers and managers to enhance labor relations. So he also encouraged the employees to express their concerns in a professional manner, urged employers to approach situation with empathy, suggesting that union act as facilitators rather than obstacles, and of course called on the labor ministry to update dispute resolution mechanisms while also boosting workplace education. So he also commended the ministry for its support and advocated for mutual respect to foster national productivity and harmony. We might take a listen to the next item whereby another businessman, Norman Ndeweyeka, highlighted for equitable treatment and transparency in the relationship between the employers and employees. We might take a listen.
Good morning, Mr. Ndeweyeka. How are you doing?
I am good, ma'am. Good morning. How are you?
I'm thank you. Last week was Workers' Day in Namibia, and this day was commemorated at Oshakati Stadium in the north, with President Nandi Ndaitwa delivering a message to the workers. And as an entrepreneur in various sectors and an employer, given the various labor issues and the broken relationships between employees and employers that exist in many sectors, we want to hear your perspective on this. Namibia is battling a number of labor-related disputes. As a business leader, how do we solve such issues, in your opinion?
Yes, thank you very much for the opportunity to share the little I know. And just as a disclaimer, I'm not a labor expert, but I'll try by all means to give the most satisfactory response to this very, very important yet pressing question. Yes, how do we deal with these battling issues in this Namibia? Well, very important, ma'am, is we need to have one understanding between the employer and the employee. What do I mean by that? By one understanding, I want the employee to understand fully the terms and conditions of their employment contract. Equally, for the employer to understand fully the need and the importance of an employee in the company, just not for revenue creation. Now want to bring in humanity and humility in this question. So importantly, for us to first and foremost to mitigate this, we need to have other employment given out. It must have a written contractual agreement between the employee and the employer. This thing of word of mouth or oral agreements that we have, especially in our informal agreement, I mean in informal sector, creates a lot of cryos and labor disputes. And when you look at contractual agreements that are written and law binding, we are equally looking at paying our employees correct salaries as per the Labor Act, as per the minimum wage, as recently amended. So that is then just one. And further is for us to negotiate employment in good faith and with honesty. Now, the question is now, how do we then mitigate this, or how do we overcome it? Very importantly, we just need to look at one basic thing that we fail to maintain in our business dealings, which is very important, open communication. By open communication, we mean that we need to encourage our employees to air their views or to be open about things that make them unhappy in their work environment without being censored. And that can be done internally. They don't need to run to the media. They don't need to run to, you know, the labor union. These things that can be done internally. So that, and that can only be done when us as employers have created that platform to allow our employees to give their honest opinion about the working conditions, about their wages and salaries within the company before it goes out. Because normally when mistreatment has gone out to the media and the union is when the company or the employer and the employee fail to meet an informal agreement within their structure. And very importantly for us to mitigate this equally or how to overcome this, it's I have noticed that some business owners or job givers, they have a sense of biasness or favoritism towards certain employees within the organization, and that creates serious conflict, and then it brings about disputes within the organization. What do I mean by that? You have, for instance, the worker that comes at 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock, and if Sarah does it, then it's a problem, but within the worker is deemed as normal. So that unfair treatment between two employees becomes a serious challenge and a serious problem. So as employees, I mean, as employers, we need to exercise fairness and unbiased treatment and relationship with our employees. All of them, if they are all regarded as employees, they must be treated fairly and equally. So those are basically the basic things that we can work on to reduce most of this labor dispute. And importantly also, I've mentioned contractual agreements. This then also speaks to when we are paying our employees salaries and wages, it must be done via bank transfer. This issue, colleagues, of paying our employees in cash brings about confusion, because if you pay people beyond 5 or you pay them the following day on Saturday, the colleagues sometimes they would go out to the locations and bring, and when you give them money, by the time they go home, they can claim that you have not paid them enough, and it brings about a labor dispute. So if there is no paper trail to say, yes, I've indeed paid you this amount as per our agreement, then of course we are going to end up at the with labor court and all that. And equally for employees, I'm urging each and everyone that is employed somewhere to open a bank account. Employers must give letters of employment, whether formal or informal, so that, or make declarations, so that these employees have open bank accounts, and we pay them in that particular bank account of their choice, so that there's a paper tray and they're also able to build, I don't want to use the word wealth, but have active accounts moving forward, and then they can equally qualify for loans or have closing accounts for their kids and all that. So it's very important that we pay salaries in accounts as per their agreements. I think I would want to end here for this question, otherwise we'll be going further and further.
No problem. Another question is, solving labor issues requires tripod negotiation. What is your message to employers, labor unions, and the labor ministry?
Very important. Thank you very much. You see, the four organs that you have mentioned in this question, we ought to see each other as enemies. The employee sees the employer as the enemy. The employer sees the union as an enemy. The union sees the labor ministry, now Minister of Justice and Labor, as an enemy in terms of progress. But what's very true and very important, and this is what we all of us need to know, is that we are all working together for the benefit of building Namibia, first and foremost, and secondly, is for the employee to be treated as humanly and with humility as possible. So we must not see each other as competitors or as enemies. Everybody is serving their, they are serving at their organization in the interest of the employee and the employer equally. So we need to understand this and establish this understanding before we move even further, that we are not fighting against each other. We are fighting for one thing and one thing only. One is to have the best labor practices in Namibia, so that Namibia is out there, because this equally increases foreign investment. It equally invites entrepreneurs to be formal employers because of the good practices and the good working relationship we have between the ministry, the labor union, the employer, and the employees. So how do we then solve these labor issues among the four, which is the employees, the employer, the labor union, and the ministry? First and foremost, the ministry is the custodian of labor and labor issues and justice in this country. I believe there should be a learning development department or office within the ministry. The colleagues need to come and out and educate the employers as to what is their responsibility towards their employees and what are the best labor practices in Namibia that we must all adhere to. That's one. And by educating, I mean they then need to host seminars, or if need be, create a platform where certain employers can register and, go to the ministry and be attended to, in that particular manner. And equally, the labor union at all times need to negotiate in the best interest of their employees. This thing of certain labor unions selling out their employees for kickbacks or for certain benefits is uncalled for. And the union needs to understand that when you go to the worker investment or Star Graphics or any of our companies or any other companies, I don't want to mention individual companies here, to say when they go and negotiate on behalf of their employees, they should not go there to fight against an employer. It's to rather go there and resolve whatever issue they have amicably with the employer, because all parties are equally important in the sense that the employee needs the employer and the employer needs the employee. So the two should work together to have these issues resolved amicably. And equally, the ministry, in the same way that it educates the employers on the best labor practices in the land, they should equally make time so that seminars are equally introduced for employees to fully understand as to what is their responsibility towards the companies that they work for in terms of labor and the practices that are put in place by our good government. So what is lacking, and the best way to resolve this, is the understanding. You see how people understand the importance of voting of late is when ECN really went out there together with individual political parties to educate even the most uneducated individuals to understand the importance of voting. Should be the same, with that the ministry needs to take this as a very important initiative to attend to this individual so that they understand the importance of it, correct and good labor practices in this land. So we need to work together And by that, then, that brings in now the open communication. It brings in about informal resolution of matters within the organization. The ministry needs to equally give now by educating, to say before you run to a lawyer or to a mediator and all that, they need to inform both the employer and the employee to say what are the best mediation factors or formulas that can be used before any other internal issue within the company is escalated, you know. And of course, I've spoken in the first question on fair treatment and all that, and equal disciplinary action and all that. And if need be, third party help should also be introduced in this manner to say, how do we then do this? Because when you then go, when the employees then go out to look for private lawyers or go to them, it's also time consuming. It requires resources that you already don't have. So it becomes a bit of a challenge. So if the four parties can really work together and have one understanding, then all these, most of the labor issues, they are going to be resolved. And yes, very important that I want to mention. You see, we need our government to really enforce the best labor practices that have been introduced by this, good government of ours, to take really a shambok and whip these foreign investors that are mal and mistreating our people in this country. One, they are not adhering to the minimum wage. Number two, there are no safety gears. Number three, they don't have benefits. Number four, they are treated as if they are foreigners in their own land. So instead of the ministry honestly just looking at small fish like ourselves that are misbehaving, though we are equally supposed to behave, we are equally supposed to be whipped when we go out of line, but these big companies with big budgets and big revenues, they are doing very little for people, and it's only us that are mostly being targeted. So really, the labor unions, I don't know why they are afraid of approaching these companies that are mistreating our people. And in fact, we have now labor issues that are taken over by activists of nowadays, which is not correct, because activists don't bring about change. You know, if there's one thing I have observed, they really just make it worse for employees. But if a recognized labor union attends to an issue that was raised by an activist, then because they have bargaining power, they have been appointed by these employees to represent them, then the issues are going to be resolved. And it need be, let the ministry boot this particular company out, or these companies out. We are ready to take up what the colleagues are currently doing, provided we get proper assistance and guidance from government. So all in all, we need to work together, the unions, the employers, the employees, and then the ministry, and the ministry need to take a lead. Our nation is very, very small. Our literacy percentage is quite low. We need to do it in the most informal way, the same way the political parties go out and inform the electorates on the importance of voting. It should equally be the same. The Minister of Labor, go out there, go in Chinatown, go in Havana, to the Shebeens and wherever. Spread the message of the best labor practices, and how should one, or where should one go should they be mistreated by their employer. And equally, we need to understand that the Minister of Labor is only not there for the employees, equally for us as employers.
Yeah. No, so thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ngueko. I think we've also reached our time. Thank you so much for the valuable feedback.
No, thank you so much, ma'am, and thank you for the good job and for reaching out.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Likewise, ma'am. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. The time is 2 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, there you heard it from Ndewi Yoka, where he stressed the importance of robust enforcement of labor laws and encouraged open communication to mitigate workplace conflicts. Now, also Ndewi Yoka highlights the need for collaboration among the unions, employers, and the government to enhance labor practices in the country. Now, to move on to the next item, is that Peter Franz spoke on the impact of the Donald Trump administration on the canceling of $550 million US dollars to African Development Bank. So now he emphasized how this can affect the economic development of the countries like Namibia. We might take a lesson, as my colleague gave us this report.
Okay, as we are here to continue with our program, so today we are going to look at African Development Bank. So they said Donald Trump is planning to slash $555 million in the funding for the African Development Bank used for the developmental fund. So today we are going to engage with France. Today we are going to engage with France. So, good afternoon, France, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you. So, what role does African Development Bank play in national development?
So, when it comes to national development, the Development Bank plays a very crucial role. This comes from the infrastructure, developing infrastructures. And also, just playing a look, also strengthening the integration within the region. So, this is what this means is basically the bank helps to promote trade within the African countries. They also tends to reduce poverty when it comes to agricultural product. They promote agriculture and food production within the country as well.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, what is the impact of cutting off this fund to national development of countries like Africa, like what Donald Trump is trying to do?
So this cutting will bring a major problem. Like it's going to reduce the project financing, like in most countries.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see, because most of the countries borrow funds from this bank to develop their infrastructure. So that's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we should also expect a reduction in employment,
mm-hmm.
let's see, when it comes to agricultural market,
mm-hmm.
and as well as the regional integration, as I stated earlier, because it's one of the bodies that foster integration within the region. So it's likely to be affected in the whole continent,
mm-hmm.
of Africa.
Yes, which means it's going to affect the whole economy. Okay, so how can African countries such as Namibia protect their economies from external forces such as cutting off funds to support national development?
So one of the solutions that Namibia can adopt is that to strengthen the domestic revenue mobilization.
Mm-hmm.
So this now has to do with tax, where the government tries to collect every cent of tax as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And also just to enhance public financial management, not just to spend money on like to borrow on for administration, which is so we have to cut on that as well. And also just to, as a Namibian country, we are part of SACU and SADC also. So in that case, we can play that crucial role and just try to promote that regional cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Franz. Have a productive day ahead.
Thank you for having me. It was nice having talking to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. The time is 6 minutes in the off 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that my colleague David Shombe spoke to Betonous Mokava on the role of NGO in national development, their challenges, and of course, what needs to be done to promote economic development of the state and its people. We might take a listen.
Yes.
We are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at economic development, and we are also looking at various sectors which are contributing to the national development agenda. And the conversation this morning, we are looking at how non-governmental organizations contribute to national development. For us to unpack this in this morning, I'm joined by Bartromeus Mokava, who is a founder of NAMCAMP. It's a non-governmental organization. And just to engage us, to what extent is a non-governmental organization contribute to national development? And it's also indicated that NGOs are one of the bodies or one of the institutions which get local and also international fundings. However, when it's coming to monitoring and evaluation, there is a bit of a question on how this is going to be, you know, implemented. So good morning, Mokava. Good morning, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Yes.
Good morning. Good morning to you and to the listeners.
Yes. As somebody who is operating within NGO sector and somebody who found an institution, maybe just a short background of what is an NGO and the necessity of an NGO before we go to the main question.
Okay. Actually, NGO is a non-governmental organization or community-based organization that we operate in a space to complement government effort.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at national development, when you look at Namibia development in particular, what role NGO play in this either policy making and also policy implementation?
Okay, NGOs play critical roles in terms of national development and the policies and implementation.
Yeah.
NGO plays such as service delivery. Service delivery, NGO often provide essential services like education, healthcare, water and sanitation, especially in underserved or remote areas where the government reach is limited. So the NGO, they make sure they reach every corner of the country.
Yeah.
And also NGO, they play a role in terms of police advocate, advocate. They advocate for the policies change or implementations. Yes, NGO advocate for inclusivity and evidence-based policies by conducting research, creating awareness, and also lobbying for the policy changes on the issue. Such as can be human rights or environmental protection or gender equality.
Yes, Mokava, there are a lot of questions about effectiveness of NGOs in Namibia, and when you look at, for example, accountability, we most likely to look at the private sector and also the public sector. However, when it's coming to NGO, from your perspective, as somebody operating from a non-governmental perspective, how effective are the NGOs, and what are some of the challenges which these, you know, non-governmental organizations are facing?
Yes, I'm speaking from a perspective of I run an NGO.
Yeah.
Not that something that I read about, but it's something that I'm experiencing.
Yeah.
Yes, as an NGO, we are experiencing challenges such as lack of trust. There's a lack of trust.
Yeah.
With the, from the government or relevant stakeholder.
Mm-hmm.
So in most cases, NGOs are viewed or are seen as political base,
mm-hmm.
or, yeah, they are critical. The trust is not there. When you want to stand up, like you want to advocate for certain police, like, no, maybe this person is political, mobilized, maybe he's a politician, he want to be seen. Well, no, you are just doing doing your work, you want to help the people, you want to engage the community,
yeah.
But the trust in the government is not there with NGOs. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the challenges. And also there's poor communication from relevant stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, let me say there's lack of structured dialogue or feedback. Feedback between the two sectors that leads to duplication of efforts and also misalignment of the policies.
Mm-hmm.
So the government is supposed to engage, okay, this year we are doing ABCD, but there's no proper channel of communication to make sure the NGO, they are also empowered.
Mm-hmm.
Empowered is, they are seen as a crucial stakeholder.
Yeah.
And there's also a challenge of resources competition.
Oh, from NGOs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
this is both may compete like ministry and NGO. Let me say we are lobbying or seeking for the same donor or the same donor funding, and also it creates like kind of a competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of us cooperating with the ministry, but or you go to, for instance, and say PEPFA, or you say to Chile, no, we are funding the ministry, we don't fund now.
Yeah.
So, in most cases, you are seeing like you guys are competing, you are in a competition with the ministry, while you want to assist the ministry, you want to assist the community. So, we are seeing also, there's also a lot of bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
Bureaucracy, like the means of the process. The Ministry of Chile, we fund NGOs.
Yeah.
We fund NGOs, we assist NGOs, but there's inconsistent, like in terms of licensing, like NGO, it took us about 4 to 3 years for us to get the license to be recognized, to be seen as an official NGO.
Mm-hmm.
But, While in those 3 years, we were busy working for the community with the BIPAR social development rate, but the ministry to be seen, the bureaucracy, it takes us 3 years just to get that recognition that yes, we are NGO.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the funding with the ministry is supposed to help with the funding, but however, ministry or other stakeholders, let me say international agencies, so, but the process, especially us that are running a small NGO that are starting from the ground, there's no fixed donor or sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a challenge.
Yeah, there is a section and within National Planning Commission, and they're also specialist and expert in developmental, you know, planning, who are also having a desk for NGOs. How is the relationship between Namibia NGOs and also National Planning Commission? Have you engaged, or how is the relationship between NGOs and National Planning Commission? Because you, or NGOs in Namibia in general, they were supposed to be part of the planning.
Yes, I might say, there's a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a relationship, such as, collaboration, a relationship, and also for symbiotic relationship for us to make sure that we are involved in terms of any decision that they're making.
Yeah.
We're involved, but in most cases, we have the shared goals or objectives.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the NGO and the National Planning Commission or anybody or any stakeholder, the mission there is the same. Then say we both fight for, we both work toward social justice, equality, sustainable development, and also making objective aligned or advocating for change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. Yes, there is a saying that there is also no cooperation among NGOs, but that is not really the main focus for this morning. However, let us look at how can we promote cooperations between NGOs, government, private sectors, and also external donors, plus also local donors, because I understand there's a bit of a competition and there's a bit of misalignment with national priorities. How can we strengthen that cooperation?
Yes, I think what need to be done is that we need to address these barriers. But I mentioned the challenges like resources competition, poor communication, and the bureaucracy, or the process is just very long, and lack of trust. So those are things that you need to improve for us if we want to see we are all working together towards one mission. So we need to build institutional trust by creating a joint planning platforms and also establishing transparent accountability mechanism of the process that we need to make sure that everyone is engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone we trust, the government must trust the NGO for us to deliver.
Yes.
So if there's no trust,
yeah,
if the rules are not in place, are too hindering, or they don't serve the purpose, the rules that are there, and there's poor communication, then we are likely to miss the point, or end of the day, we won't achieve what we're supposed to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Brother Mirs Mukava, thank you very much, and thank you very much for joining us this morning, and thank you for your input.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, there you have it. And my colleague, Sharon Seaman, also spoke to Leonata Lungameni from African of the contribution of an NGO to national development. So we might take a listen to this particular update.
So as we are going to continue with our early morning scoop, today we are going to talk about NGOs, and NGOs are non-profits and may run budgets of millions or billions of dollars each year. NGOs rely on a variety of funding sources, from private donations and memberships dues to government grants. So its role in the society, it's in promotion of national development, non-governmental organizations, which includes local, international associations, research trusts, and think tanks, are some of the institutions with no clear reports on what they have contributed to national development. So today we are going to engage with Lungameni Leonatan. I'm good. Lungameni, what are the roles, or what roles does NGOs play in the national development shaping policies and implementations?
Okay, firstly, I would just like to start saying that NGOs have often been misunderstood and seen as the background players. So many people don't always see the full scope of what NGOs do.
Mm-hmm.
But their role is quite important. So these are the people that are on the grassroots. And first most, they always fill the gaps between service deliveries. Mm-hmm. And especially in the areas where government don't reach or are unable to, they are always there.
Mm-hmm.
I say, take for example the Red Cross Namibia. During the floods and droughts, they stepped in quickly with the reliefs and the humanitarian everything. This is because they feel that they have to do this to help out, because they can't see the help coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this development, or so to say national development in action,
mm-hmm,
they are protecting the vulnerable communities. But beyond service delivery, we also have other NGOs like the Institute for Public Policy Research that always publishes policy briefs and recommendations that guide public debates and influence legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly, these NGOs, when we speak of NGOs, these are the people that the government always really need to work with. Because these are the people that are in the communities. These are the people that need this development, at a faster pace. So we can even talk on other NGOs like Lifeline, Childline. They offer emotional support and advocacy for children's rights.
Mm-hmm.
They not only help the children in need today, but they also campaign for systematic reforms that protect children tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have groups like NAGOV Trust, which represents civil societies. They bring NGOs together and ensure their voices are heard in national policy discussions, including the development planning stages. Yeah, so these are the people that we really need to work with. These are the people that are on the ground, and they make that action is done.
Okay. What is the relationship between NGOs and movement agencies in driving national development?
There is a very strong connection.
Mm-hmm.
Movements are often more on the grassroots and they are agents. Say for like climate activists, these are the movements that are on the grassroots. Mm-hmm. And NGOs bring the structures and research and legal background.
Mm-hmm.
And backing the backup on these aspects, the structures, the research, and the legal framework.
Mm-hmm.
I would, for example, I can maybe give Afria Namibia, where I serve as a logistic officer. We are a youth-led organization, but we also work with youth movements on the ground. So if there is a push for better sexual reproductive health services for young people, the movements bring the energy and the voice.
Mm-hmm.
NGOs like us, Afrian, we provide the technical expertise, the reports, and the partnerships to turn the energy into tangible actions. So we always make sure that this connection is born, because sometimes you don't have the resources to boost up the energy that you need. For instance, going to the youth, but you have the information. You have the knowledge, you have the experts in this, in the certain areas. So when the movements come, these are the people that go, to the urban areas, the rural areas. These people, they bring the connection together to boost the information is out there and it's rich and every person has and knows about the information.
Mm-hmm. So, what is the barrier to effective coordinations between government agencies and NGO, Lungameni?
Yeah. Okay. This is now the real issue.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Namibia, this is a very big issue. One barrier you could say is, we lack to have a structural dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm talking about a dialogue, we mean where there's no consistent national platform where NGOs and government meet regularly to plan and coordinate. Everyone works in their own space. Mm-hmm. So you might find NGOs duplicating services. You have an NGO that's focusing on HIV, the other one is also focusing on HIV.
Mm-hmm.
So they are working, and sometimes they might even work outside national plans, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Another challenge is the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes NGOs are seen as troublemakers, especially when they call out corruption and rights and transparency. So instead of being embraced as partners, they are sidelined.
Mm-hmm.
Both want development, but they don't always see eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to be that way. NGOs want to collaborate. They bring deep community knowledge and flexibility. Government has the resources and the authority. When those two are combined, you get the real results. You get on-the-ground results. And this is now where the solutions start coming out. And the people, that's when they'll also see the results. So we have a lot of barriers. Also the information and data sharing.
Mm-hmm.
NGOs gather rich community level data, but there is no a central coordination system to integrate it into national development strategies.
Mm-hmm.
So NGOs sometimes also have a competing, when you have such things where you have duplicates, you have NGOs competing amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They are busy competing amongst themselves because of donor funding. And that brings competition rather than collaboration. And you can't have five organizations or NGOs that are working on HIV, but you all want the same thing. What do you mean you all want the same thing, but you're not working together or collaborating with each other?
Yeah.
So I think this is a very big issue within our country, or maybe so to say, most of the African countries. This is what we lack, collaboration, because we all want to do our certain things there, just because of the donor funding. But if we had the government just coming in and having a structured dialogue,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we will be on a good pace and a faster pace.
Mm-hmm. So before we leave, can you tell me maybe what are the benefits of NGOs, if we may to speak?
The benefits of NGOs?
Mm-hmm.
The benefits of NGOs is that you have real-time data.
Mm-hmm.
You have the primary data and information.
Mm-hmm.
So this information that these NGOs come up with, mm-hmm. they don't just come up like our policies are done nowadays, where you just have our ministers just come in the room and decide that this is what's best for the people, or mm-hmm. best for the people.
Mm-hmm.
These people go out in the society and make sure that they see eye to eye. They see what's happening. They talk to the people. This is gathering the primary resources and information. So the benefit they have is that they have real-time information, and they can literally give this information or work with the government so that they can make sure that the people are reached,
mm-hmm.
and the information is out there. Not just the information, but we need the development within the people. But you can't develop a place where you have never been, but you are deciding that you see, no, Havana, we already know it's like this. Let's bring, you don't know. Go to the people, talk to the people. So but this is already being done.
Mm-hmm.
The NGOs has already done this.
Mm-hmm.
So what they need to do is just that, to collaborate with the government.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Longameni, for being with us. I would like to say have a blessed day ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, the time is 29 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much for joining us today, and that was our last update of the day. Thank you so much, and I wish you all the best to listen to all the programs as well. And the following program is the Unpacking of the Day with Tate Mike Oshovele. And from me, Loisa Shimi, it's a very good day, but before I give the mic, please do not forget to follow us on social media platform. EKLFM Namibia, you'll find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the newspaper page on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Please do not also forget to rather subscribe on to our channel, to our WhatsApp channel that is now the Eagle FM Media House. You can always find us there, and then you can able to at least follow up to the daily news update and, of course, the newspaper alerts. And from me, Loisa Shimi, have a blessed day.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, Leo Sherero Omainburiro, the Catholics Imane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwar Diara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha with the Kirokabuna, Imatina, Omjo, Chicago Shafas and Anana, Longishifa, Yai, Shikamoshiwana, Iamoyawa, Otaimbo Botamani, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Obitom Banawa, Omjika, Taitanina, Omaguro, Nidanitoma, Iwe, Longishifa, Okupiramo, Ikelefem Media House, Way 20 Meneha, Uka Kumbanga Nina. Para un pasi fregi vimos por yo voy programa de tu moambo de la selma con la gente que vimos la tienda tu jari jamanotano o viaje y que lo hacemos lo hago.